At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
It's the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander. Hope you're staying safe during this pandemic. Another sports betting profile during this strange time in our lives. Again, Alan Boston has been kind enough to join us to do this with us. Rufus Peabody, Captain Jack Andrews, Bob Stoll has sat with us to just talk about their evolution as people, but specifically for our purposes as sports bettors. Each story as fascinating as the previous one. Today fits that bill. This is a gentleman who I have never met before I talked to him this past week. Icon in the sports betting world. He was one of the subjects, of course, profiled in The Best of It, that you may recall from 2016. Alan Boston was also in that one. This is Alan Dink Dankinson, a story unlike any other. Everybody's got their own. His, as unique as they come. Real kind of him to sit down and discuss. Hopefully, you can draw some inspiration from it. Dink, on the Beating the Book podcast. Enjoy.
It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network, Sirius XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, the Sports Betting Network. As I mentioned, Gil Alexander live from San Francisco. During this pandemic, I have tried to, for lack of a better comparison, transition into sort of Roy Firestone, Bob Costas mode and profile some bettors, guys that we otherwise might have a tough time getting in and doing them justice with enough time when we have a standard sports schedule. Rufus Peabody has been kind enough to join us. Captain Jack, Bob Stoll, Dr. Bob, Alan Boston, of course, kicked it off for us. Today, I'm real thrilled to have this guy on. I have not had the opportunity ever to have spoken to him prior to this. He cut his teeth back in the day when he was a kid betting horses in New York, became a bookmaker, New York, New Jersey, pretty sizable bookmaker, didn't go so well in the end, got busted, spent some time in jail, came to the dark side after that, the dark side meaning the betting side, maybe not the dark side, maybe that's a good side. Has been a renowned sports bettor for many, many years, primarily on the sport of hockey, and has been the subject, really, of a couple films. One, Bruce Willis playing a character that was based on him in 2012's Lay the Favorite. Then, of course, many of you familiar with The Best of It from 2016. Alan Dink Dankinson, good morning to you, sir. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Gil.
Apologize for the long intro. Can I go through the first? Let me just start here with two perfunctory questions that I did not reflect on very, very deeply. But one, the last name is Dankinson. The nickname is Dink. Was that just somebody mispronouncing it at some point?
Yeah, my sixth grade teacher would be calling me Dinkinson. And then I was caught by a fellow student in my class doing my math homework during class. He came up to the teacher and said, Dinky is doing his math homework. And somehow the Dinky name has stuck for 55 years since that day.
And there it is. Should I address you as Dink? Would that be okay? Alan seems a little full.
Either way, well, you have an Alan that you really, so I'll go with Dink.
And the other thing is, and please forgive me, because you could, I'm risking you walking off the set here, but I'll tell you a little story. Me and my buddy E, who is a very successful professional bettor, we were walking out of a Vegas Golden Knights Tampa Bay Lightning game in the Knights' first season. And you may recall this. It was the game where the Knights scored with seconds left to win it. It was a pretty dramatic ending. I think the Lightning had come back to tie it up, and then Golden Knights win it in seconds. And as we were walking out of the stadium, actually, as we got into Park MGM, which I think at the time was still the Monte Carlo, my buddy, and I don't know why we brought you up, but we started to have a conversation about you, and then, like, just apparition, you appeared. And the reason that we saw you from afar is obviously because of your hair. This is the first thing that people see. Those are watching at VSiN.com and the VSiN app. Has this always been a signature of yours?
This is my hair. This is what it is. I guess that's kind of odd because my dad lost his hair at a pretty young age. So it's been one of those things that, I'm known for. It's not my favorite thing to be known for, but it's okay. I'm glad
Let's just put it this way. We wouldn't have spotted somebody else from afar. It's just a signature of yours. It's a very iconic thing for you.
I remember that game I was with inside the pylons in that game. In Legend at that time, back to his car, which was parked by Parks.
Who were you with? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Inside the Pylons. He's a pretty famous Twitter horse player. Gambler.
Oh, okay. Inside the Pylons. I'm sorry, I didn't hear. All right, I promise you, Dink, the questions get better from here on out. I promise you. Let's start at the beginning. I mentioned that you grew up betting horses in New York. Where did you grow up specifically, and what was your first experience with the glory that is wagering, sir?
My first 37 years was spent in various places in Queens. I grew up my first 10 years in Richmond Hill, moved to South Jamaica, which was a co-op on the old South Jamaica racetrack. At 15, I was playing a lot of basketball, and two of the older kids took me to Roosevelt Raceway, and that they changed my life. So two guys I've lost touch with, Steve Rosenblatt and Barry Lieberman. I wonder if they're still listening to Sports Talk Radio. I loved it there. I fell in love with the action. I didn't have any money, but I think that helped me because I was pretty regularly going to the track since I was 16 without a bankroll until I got one. And by that time, I kind of learned enough about handicapping to be making a profit while I was going to college. Mostly the night tracks. I was a harness track in New York, and then I segued to day tracks kind of when that game fizzled. But I was there the opening day at the Meadowlands. I think I went to Roosevelt every day for a meet except two. It was just my life. It was going to school during the day, going to college, not doing any work outside of the classroom, going to classes, playing poker in the cafeteria, and then going to Roosevelt Raceway.
Sounds like a lovely childhood to me. Were horses the only thing you bet? Or was that just your favorite thing to bet?
It was what I cut my teeth in when I was 17. To be a beginning of my gambling career was all horses. I met a man at the track who was a small bookmaker, and he told me to gather up my friends and have them bet with him, and he'd give me 25% of the losses back, or the quarter sheet. After 2 years of doing okay, I realized maybe I should do this myself and get 100% of the losses. I was booking for a little while I still lived with my parents in Forest Hills.
Okay, so I teased at the top that eventually you got busted, but I would imagine you got big enough. Well, maybe it didn't have anything to do with you being a big enough bookmaker. Maybe it happened. Maybe it had to do with a specific client. How did you ultimately run afoul of the law with that?
I grew. I started booking, what would be considered squares. Then I gradually got a sheet of wise guys. I booked the Koshers. I booked the computers. I booked Mickey Appleman. I booked Alan Boston in his formative years. And that turned me into a broke bookmaker because I wasn't able to handle wise guys for a while. I had to borrow some money, regrouped, learned how to be a good bookmaker, grew. My strategy was never turn down a customer who paid. It was hard for a while because I had like 8 wise guys and I never got buybacks in those games at that time. And I have to think about what year that was now. About 1977, those games started winning extremely regularly. So that put me in a hole. I got out of the hole. I turned my business around. I ended up having 150 customers who bet regularly. There was always two-way action. I opened at 4:00 Eastern, and my first two customers were Mickey Appleman and Alan Boston, and they would fire the whole college basketball board a lot of times against each other at the same number. I innovated. I didn't want to book that high. I wasn't the biggest bookmaker in the world, but I took NBA totals, which weren't very popular back then. And there was a lot of two-way business from middlers versus sharps, and that helped me as well get a bankroll. An agent would give me a customer, and I got one from Detroit. No idea who he was. Only talked to him 1 or 2 times as a person. He was just a name and a bettor who kind of was, I guess I could see that he was betting the sharp sides late. So I guess he was laying off his business, which I never cared to discuss. He was just a customer and he was betting the right sides very late. So he really didn't have an advantage betting bad numbers. It turned out he was involved with Isaiah Thomas and running a dice game, and the FBI was aware of him, and they tapped his phones, and I was one of his bookmakers, and they assumed I worked for him as opposed to just have a customer bookmaker relationship with him. Got arrested, took 4 years for the case to get prosecuted. I hired a very good sentencing lawyer, Alan Ellis, and he probably saved me from going to real jail that I got into a work release jail. So I worked at a friend's deli for 300 days straight, worked every day. So I was never really in jail during the daytime. It was kind of sleepover jail.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't that bad. I drove my car to jail and I drove my car to work and then I drove my car back to jail. I took an extra hour or two to go to a GA meeting that happened at Chet Forty, the Monday Night Football director, was at that meeting too. We were friends, but he passed away in a year or two after I got released from jail or from the halfway house or the work release program. That got me a felony, and then I decided I can't do this anymore because the second felony might mean some serious jail time. So I had thought I learned enough from the people who bet with me to be a successful bettor. And just like my bookmaking career, I learned the hard way that that's not that easy. And I had to regroup there too. I had a decent bankroll, which got cut into because I bet too high for my talents. But then again, I learned to take that into consideration. Work harder, still was always a good hockey handicapper, but I was trying a little too hard to win at baseball. Regrouped, built up my bankroll again, and now I've been doing that for 1995. I moved to Vegas, so 5, 25 years on the other side. So about 15 years bookmaking, 25 years betting, maybe a little more on the betting side.
I mean, isn't the biggest point of all that, to me, the big takeaway, obviously, it's a roller coaster ride for you. But, you know, running foul of the law aside, if we could just put that to the side and table that for a second, you could not have gotten, it would seem, a better education to become a successful sports bettor than from your entire trajectory, right? Like to book sharps, to see, oh, this is how I'm getting beaten, to book squares, and then to really realize that as a better than the experience, again, as a better early on, as you said, to have a lack of success early on. But like that, the bookmaking lessons must have helped you tremendously on the other side.
Yeah, sure. It was very easy to see what not to do because I had a bunch of, you know, a ton of squares, and the squares tended to lose regularly. The wise guys always beat the closing line. So I think most of my time is now beating the closing line as opposed to picking winners.
And was that the single biggest lesson, Dink? Was it beating the closing line? I mean, if someone's landing on this show for the first time, let's say they're a novice bettor, what would be another bit of macro advice you would give them as like the single biggest?
There's so much more to learn than what you think you know. That you have to, you know, it's great if you can follow somebody or know somebody who's sharp and see how much work they do, because I don't know any successful gamblers, and it's harder now because you have to program and have bots and, you know, really have some kind of a model, whether it's an intern, whether it's a model that you can push into a computer or a model you can write down on paper. I'm still a paper and pen guy. But to arrive at a line that will get you the better, that will beat the closing number. That's my objective in betting, beating the closing number. If you're just going to bet without caring what number you're laying and when you're laying it at the right time, either early or very late, you're up against a lot of very sharp people now. It's really hard. I would stress that there are brilliant people in this business. When I first got into betting and bookmaking, a college degree would make you one of the top 5% of the people who are in the gambling field. And now a college degree would probably make you in the bottom, just a college degree would make you in the bottom 10%.
Jeez. Well, we got to take a break here. When we come back, I want to dive into some of what you just touched on, which is how do you view young, really educated bettors today who are doing things with algorithms? Do you view them with any disdain, or do you view them with admiration and wish that you had had a similar background? I think you touched on that a little. Also, with legalization now, are some of your worst fears coming true? Do you still think that sports betting ultimately for you is a profitable thing? We'll get back to that. Alan Dink Dankinson, kind enough to join us right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. James Salinas, Michael Lombardi as well. Come on back.
Come back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game, just like the man said, Gil Alexander live in San Francisco. Alan Dink Dankinson, kind enough to join us for the hour this morning. And I mentioned all the things that Alan has done betting-wise. I didn't mention a couple years ago, World Series of Poker, super senior event, cashed in that, I think a top 10 finish. Lots of stuff here that, you know, just a laundry list of things. We were joking on Twitter, you were joking last night, if we talk wrestling, you'd stay here for 2 hours. Are you still obsessed with wrestling, Alan?
I promote a small independent promotion. Wrestling's got me by. I listen to some podcasts every day. It kind of keeps me busy. Not a big movie guy. I don't really want to watch Ozark and be depressed about seeing people die. So I'm more of a Princess Bride kind of guy. So I want to see things that make me happy as opposed to, you know, intense or watching movies about gangsters. You know,
I understand.
I'm trying to find happy things that will distract me. And wrestling is a nice little fantasy world that's created to like get you through the hard times of the real world. And this is the real hard times. I'm 66. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I mean, look, I say it. I never thought it happened in my lifetime. I'm sure at 66, you feel the same way. As someone who is 66 years old, Dink, and you look at some of these young guys who are super educated and super smart. I brought up Rufus earlier on the show. Rufus Peabody is always the first person that leaps to mind for me as someone who does this. Just absolutely cerebrally. In fact, Rufus will be the first person to tell you as soon as his emotion gets involved, that's when he gets nervous or his thoughts. Do you look at guys like that just to hold him up as one of many who do that? Not a huge universe, but more than just him, obviously. Do you look at them and have an almost is it admiration? Is it jealousy? Like equal parts that? What is it for you?
It's 90% admiration. I think it's a little jealousy in the fact that I can't be like them. I can't do what they do. I can't code. I don't know what R is. I barely can use Excel. I'm doing things, the primitive way. I've become the dinosaur of the business. But I'm friendly with all of those people. Rufus, I know I wouldn't consider him a friend, but I definitely respect him. I think he respects me. I'm friendly with Joey Tunes. I'm friendly with Spanky. I don't want to miss people. I'm friends with Rob Pizzola. A lot of people who do a lot of coding and great work. And, they respect me because I paved the way for them, I guess. And they know I respect them. I don't consider them enemies. They make me do work a little bit differently to get the good numbers. I have to bet before them because I have to bet when the market doesn't have that much volatility. I have to bet when Pinnacle and Chris open right away because they don't want to touch those lines because they don't get down enough. That really helps me. But I admire them so much. I know them. I know their families, a lot of them. They're just really good people, the ones that I do know. And I consider a lot of them friends, and I certainly respect what they do.
We only have 90 seconds here before the next break, Dink, but given what you just said, that hurdle and perhaps others, sports betting then to turn a profit is that much more difficult now than I guess it was 10 years ago, 15 years, 20 years. Not I guess, I know. Is it to the extent that it almost deflates you sometimes, or do you still think that you can turn a profit here consistently?
I think I can turn a profit here consistently, but I used to be sure I can turn a profit here consistently. I have to keep up on my game, find little things. I've been fortunate. I cashed in the NHC this year. That was a little bonus, the horse handicapping contest. I'm a kind of a jack of all trades, master of none, but trying to beat the closing line is what I can do by work and by calling around and by shopping well and having little outs and having people help me a little, get down on good numbers. That's my test, beating the closing line. It's not perfect. I know that's what a lot of gamblers think is the end all to end all. And I think it's almost the end all to end all, but there's a time also to know enough about sports to buy back at the right time as well. I always learn. I like to learn, so I like to talk to these kids who do well, and a lot of them have been nice enough to share.
I love the attitude. Others aren't as gracious, I'll be honest with you. We'll come back. We'll find out just exactly what your betting pie is these days, what you still love to bet, what you love to bet recreationally, what's for profit. We'll come back. Alan Dink Dinkinson. On A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
It is Gil Alexander, live in San Francisco. Dink, Alan Dinkinson in Las Vegas. Appreciate it, Dink, and I appreciate you hanging out with us. So what are you betting these days? So in other words, hockey became the sport that you were best known for. I assume when hockey resumes that you will all be all about hockey. But you mentioned you are involved in some, you're still playing horses. That's what you cut your teeth on, to use your words. There's poker. Like, what are you doing for profit these days? What are you doing recreationally?
Almost doing only recreational stuff. I consider this my first vacation in 40 years. But I do look at things. I got involved with the UFC card. That didn't work out so well. So that was the only thing I've done in the last 2 months that I consider real gambling. I do keep busy by looking at horses, but my handle is like $300 a day and maybe even less than that sometimes. I'm just, I don't want to handicap Fonner and Will Rogers. And I always thought as tracks closed, I didn't trust Gulfstream and Tampa Bay to stay open that long. I've held my own with it for the last 2 months, but really haven't even tried to make a serious profit because I didn't want to come into this and go, oh, there's only a few things to bet, so I'll bet them. I didn't want to study Korean baseball. I'm just waiting for sports to come back, and hopefully there's some good news about baseball. I do that. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to get through this without, you know, problems, and I think the problems can cause them to close down after they open. So I'm taking a very pessimistic view until we get this thing cleared with a vaccine, and it might be a year, it might even be more. But you know, I'll keep going with trying to be more social actually and see.
Oh, I think we lose Dink. Guys, hey there. We'll try to get Dink back. Yeah, we got you back. Yeah, I know. I meant upon resumption, obviously. But you know, you bring that up about your pessimism with this working out. I have sort of, you know, I haven't really joked. That's not the right word. But whenever I express skepticism, Dink, on that as well, because I'm on your page, like, I'll believe it when I see the plan that makes sense. First of all, by the way, with baseball, the first thing that should exist is there's a no spitting rule. How are we even going to get past that hurdle, right? Like, it's so basic with even something like that. So I'm with you on that, but people get all crazy when you even express skepticism. But when it does come back, you're primarily what I'm getting, a hockey and baseball guy.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I mean, I'm chasing numbers or, you know, something, looking for value in the markets on basketball or football. I do that as an aside. Again, if there's a rogue number and I see it moving towards that away from that number, I might grab it at whatever sportsbook account I have in with the Vegas sportsbooks, or a couple of offshores, or a couple of paperheads, maybe a trade with somebody. Looking at like 4-07 here, you want +4 +07 head to head deal. There's always things to do that give you a small edge. My edges are much smaller than they used to be 20 years ago. But I mean, my biggest edge was before Don Best. Don Best kind of ruined the business because it gave you too much information. Instead of working hard to get a line and to see where lines were moving, all you had to do is have a machine that everybody else has. And if you didn't have that machine and that information, you were way behind the game. So you know, I blame Don Best for making this business highly competitive with people who don't work that hard because they see the same numbers that I do.
Yeah.
Yet you're in the old, I was there when Caesar's Palace had 7 and the and Bally's had 5 at the same time. And I had runners in those places, you know, laying the 5 or taking the 7 or both. Times have changed.
Some of us hear stories like that, Nick, and we're just like, wow, what an interesting time that must have been.
That was my biggest regret. I didn't take advantage of great opportunities. I just thought they'd be there forever. So, you know, just make a decent amount of money instead of optimizing my game.
For lack of a better way of phrasing this, in a more delicate way, I guess, what else sort of pisses you off about the industry? Like, in other words, Twitter's an interesting place, right? No one ever loses a bet there. With legalization has come a proliferation of sports betting media, this network included. What bothers you about, you know, this latest evolution? Have your worst fears come true with that?
No.
In some ways?
I think touts bother me the most, the people who have no opinions and act like they do. And I'm not quite as, you know, obsessive about it as some people, but that people look at people like, the Vegas Dave as a prominent gambler or something. And it's like, oh God, the guy's just trying to scam money. He's this generation's Stu Finer. It's all smoke and mirrors, and that's not what gamblers should be looked at. So I think I'm grouped into that, the people with the highest regard from the public are not deserving of the highest regard. It's people like you who know some of the people because they're your guests deserve to be respected. And sometimes that respect goes to the people who are just trying to steal your money. I think that's my biggest problem with the industry is it's very capable to attract scammers and have the scammers be successful. Also, people who take shots and don't pay. Credit is a double-edged sword. It's good for people who get credit and bookmakers who pay and gamblers who pay, but it's really a problem when there are laydowns and bookmakers open up and have no intention of paying. There was a bookmaker the day before the draft who must have saw what his viability was, and every bet was one-sided, and he decided to close down and come back when a sport would come and not honor any bets that were pending. So in order to get out of that one-day disaster that he knew was coming, he just canceled all the bets. You hear a lot of bookmakers are struggling now, yeah. So I worry about that too. So I only bet with the ones where I know I'm going to get paid.
Yeah, sadly, we've heard stories during this pandemic of a lot of skins out there that have done that with NFL draft bets, for instance. Sure. Yeah, and sadly, they're not few and far between. Which is obviously not a good thing to say the least. We'll come back one more break. We'll wrap it up with you, Dink. Want to get into how Lay the Favorite came to you. Is the book better than the film? How, of course, the best of it came to you, all that. Alan Dinkinson, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network at VSiN.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Don't forget, now's the time to become a VSiN Plus subscriber. It is free. You won't have to decide what you want to do, pay or cancel, until at least one of the major sports returns. Just go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Alan Dinkinson, Dink, joining us for the duration of the hour here, for the balance, I should say, on A Numbers Game at VSiN, SiriusXM Channel 204. And thank you once again, Alan, for doing so. One of the reasons that I really am attracted to all the stuff that you put out on Twitter and just in meeting you here today is you're super honest. You're transparent. You're not one of these people who's talking about, hey, I win just like I used to. So I always respect honesty. Honesty is not abundant quality in this industry, as you very well know far better than I do. So I appreciate that, sir. 2012, Lay the Favorite. Bruce Willis plays a character based on you. You were a consultant for this film, I believe, at first. How did this come to you?
Well, the girl who wrote the book worked for me, and we're still friends. I got to meet the director and the screenplay writer, Stephen Frears and D.V. DeVincentis, because they came to see, before they did the screenplay, they came to look at my office and how I did my business, and we became friendly, and they asked me to be a consultant, which about all the gambling stuff. So we did it 10 days in Vegas and the first 7 days in New Orleans, and that was my half of the movie where I consulted. I was promised a paycheck. I never got it. That was from the Alan Emma. I'm not Alan Emma. I don't know. He's fighting with 50 Cent with some crazy independent guy.
Fighting with 50 Cent.
Yeah, 50 Cent was actually a producer of Lay the Favorite, if you look at the credits. Not that.
Wow.
I think he was a money backer. He put in money. They bought the movie. They sold the movie before the movie was shot, so they didn't want to put anything into the movie, which is why the movie wasn't that good, because it was already purchased.
Nice.
The book is great. The book is so much better than the movie. The movie was And then the book was very respected. She wrote such a good book that it became a movie. I don't know if you've read the book, but I always advise people to read the book before they see the movie, because if they see the movie, they'd have no interest in reading the book.
How about the best?
The best of it, I knew Scott Everly a little. He was a producer at TVG. He was going to do a movie based on The Shrink, but in the middle of that movie, The Shrink passed away. So he picked it up with Alan Boston and I and Lem Banker and did a documentary on four gamblers, even though one had already been deceased. That was fun. That was easy. He just came to my house and shot a lot of footage. And we're still friends, too. I talk to him every once in a while. He's in Minnesota now. So I've had so many coincidences in my life that turned my life.
Yeah, when you look back on all this, not to say that you don't have still a bright future. I don't want to. This is not in any way a eulogy of any kind. But when you look back on life, those who are listening to this show, who are super fascinated by gambling, by the characters who have created the industry into what it is, you know, had a big hand in it becoming what it is today. And they look at, I mean, look, we just talked about you were better, you became a bookmaker, you went to jail, then you became better again, you became successful, better, you were, you know, you had movies based on you. When you look back on it all, we all have a sort of story. I know I tell about my mom, one of her sons is a doctor, my brother, the other one does something else, right? She doesn't know really how to describe what it is that I do, other than, oh, I think he's on the radio. So we all have a lot of that in common. I'm not sure if your mom, your mom
might have told everybody that for years more. That I was an accountant. I was an accountant for 30 years.
Does she get what you do now, or did she get finally?
She's gone now. She dealt with what I did when I went to jail. But until then, I was an accountant. She thought she could get me out of going to jail because she voted for somebody who's a district attorney or something in New York. And I don't know. She never really grasped what the whole thing works, how it works. She thought gambling was terrible. She wanted me to be a stockbroker, and I tried to explain that that's kind of like a town. That's not really an honorable, most honorable profession. I've just been lucky. 2 years ago, for 2 months, Joanne Calderwood lived with me. That was another one of those miracle connection things. She's going to be fighting for the UFC championship against Valentina when Valentina recovers from her injury. I know Shayna Baszler well. She's one of my closer friends, and she's going to be probably fighting for the WWE championship again. So little things just fall into my lap, and they're a bunch of fun miracles that made my life very exciting.
You're thinking of writing a book now?
Yeah, I'm thinking of writing a book. I just know how my vocabulary, I know how good Beth was as a writer, and I so pale up behind her that, you know, and I look at my, I write a chapter and I go, oh God, this is terrible, you know, and then I send it to her and she goes, she makes suggestions, and I go, you may as well write the book for me, because that's what it's going to be. You know, she just corrects all my flaws and my lack of a good vocabulary and lack of setting a scene. And, you know, that's one of my strengths, is I know my weaknesses. I think that's, somebody once described that as my strength, that I know my limitations and I don't try to exceed them. Which is very important in gambling.
It's very important in gambling. It's very important in life, right? It's a universal truism. Recognizing what you don't know is really a function of intelligence. So I guess we sort of answered the question. Maybe we didn't. But what I was going to get to was, as you look back on all of it, would you have had it any other way? I'm sure you wouldn't have wanted to go to jail, but you said it was kind of an okay experience under the context of what going to jail means. I'm sure there are little regrets, but just from a big standpoint, a macro standpoint, would you have done anything differently, or is this the life that you are that you wanted to live?
This is definitely the life I wanted to live. I hate the fact I'm this old and people are like going over my life like I won't have more life coming. But this is the life that I like, and I wish it's been taken away from me by a pandemic. I'm also very, you know, I'm involved with a band called The Joy Formidable. They've become friends and they tour a lot, and now they can't tour. And that was something I always wanted to look forward to, the next show. I would pick a show where a friend is living that I haven't seen for a while and just fly out and go to that show. That was important to me. I thought I had like 5 good years left before I can't do things, like, because of age limitations. I'm worried about that. They're taking away like 25% of my last good years with the pandemic.
You know, I say that, Alan, I say that, think about like 28-year-olds and 29-year-olds or of that age. I've been saying that about that age group, which is, wow, that's like, that's prime years that they, you know, obviously they'll have years to make up for it, but it really is time from their prime that you can't get back in some way. So it kind of sucks all the way around, right?
Also going to change the world. The world's going to be a lot different when we get through this. Things that you can't do, things you won't do, things that won't be there. You know?
Yeah, we shall see. Listen, I really appreciate you spending the time. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hoping we get the vaccine sooner than later and like we can return to somewhat normal within a year.
Absolutely.
And then make the most of it now.
I'll stop this.
Like Captain Jack is preparing for the future. You know, Spanky is preparing more plans to attack more bookmakers in the future to get ready for when we come back to normal.
Yeah. Captain Jack,
I'm still hopeful that this will not cripple us much longer. I'm hoping 6 months things will get much better.
I hope so too. For those of us who are as concerned as any, still understand and recognize that at some point you got to dip your toe back into the economy. You can't do this forever. So I think if you could hold two thoughts,
there's a balance.
Yeah,
better not be going tilted towards opening too soon. You know. There's a balance. I understand that there's a balance. I have wealthy friends who don't leave a house because they don't need to leave the house. But I recognize that a lot of people do need to get back financially. So things are going to start closing. Yeah. We're going to lose a lot of businesses. And I feel terrible about that, too. You know, I worry about the world. It's not just me. I worry about the world.
Dink, I got 60 seconds. What's the charity you're involved with real quick?
SoCal Thoroughbred Rescue. They take horses from the racetrack and rehome them and give them a job to do. Old Friends is a very big one. It's a little Old Friends for horses that aren't all that successful. SCTBRescue.org is the website. If you have a little extra money and you care about horse racing, it would be great if you donate. I will be back when sports reopen, giving out picks for donations. It goes right to the charity. I don't take a penny out of that. It's my giving back. Gamblers don't really take anything, but they don't give back either. So that's my way of giving back. I think a lot of gamblers are now giving back more, seeing the way the world is today.
Alan Dinkinson, everybody. Dink, you can follow him on Twitter at, I guess that's Dink Inc. Isn't that what that is? At Dink Inc. Yes. D-I-N-K-I-N-C.
The name of my fake
Twitter. Yeah. Say again, I'm sorry?
Name of my fake business when I was working with.
the name of your fake business back in the day.
Yes.
Alan, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was fun, Bill. Thank
you. Alan Dinkinson, right here on the Numbers Game at DJ.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.